So take a comfortable and alert posture. And then take a couple of deep breaths, settling into your body as you breathe out. Letting go of the tensions in your body, relaxing the face, the forehead, the shoulders, the stomach, then allowing yourself to be the way you are. Notice as you sit here, what is the basic mood or emotional state that's present for you right now? Are you happy, unhappy, content, discontent? Stressed out, sad, enthusiastic, excited? Angry? What is the basic mood or atmosphere, emotional atmosphere, that you bring with you right now? Simply noticing it, maybe giving it a name, a soft, gentle name, allowing it to be. And then noticing where in your body you most strongly feel this emotion or mood. What part of your body tells you that you have this emotional or mental state? And if you can find a part of your body that's associated with it, and allowing it to be the way it is, stay present for that place. Just stay there a little bit, sensing and feeling, not trying to make anything happen except being present. Taking a deep breath, one last time settling into the body, letting go of your thoughts and concerns, and then feeling your breathing, feeling the body as it breathes, wherever the breath is predominant, in the chest, the stomach, the nostrils. Feeling the expansion, contraction of the body, the coolness and the warmth of the breath. Feeling and sensing what happens in the body as you breathe. Perhaps as if the breath, The in-breath and out-breath is like the waves on the ocean, coming and going, rising and falling. And your awareness is like a cork floating up and down, floating on top of the waves. So keep your awareness resting in the body's experience of breathing. When your mind wanders away, gently, softly, come back to the breath. Not resisting anything or changing anything. In the midst of who you are, breathing consciously, in the midst of your being, the arising and passing of breath. Remembering to come back. If strong physical sensations are more compelling to you than your breath, you can let go of the breath and let the sensations in the body be the subject of your mindfulness, sensing it, feeling it, allowing it to be. Very gently labeling it, giving it a name. And if no physical sensations are particularly compelling, then just simply stay with the physicalness of breathing. What it feels like for your body to be breathing. Whenever you notice you've drifted away, come back, come back. If you feel discomfort in your body or itch in your body, and that becomes strong, let that be your meditation. Letting your mind rest or settle in the area of discomfort, getting to know it. Noticing the difference between the experience itself and how you react or relate to it. Naming it, labeling it. And then again, as we get to the end of the sitting, notice what your emotional state is now. What is the predominant mood or mental state or emotional state that you feel? Maybe it's subtle, doesn't have to be strong. But whatever it is, whether you're calm or impatient, sad or happy, restless, relaxed, feel and sense what it's like in your body to have this emotion present. Allowing it to be there, softly name it, label it. And feeling where in your body primarily does this emotion reside? And how is it sensed? What sensations in that part of the body tell you that this emotion is present? Simply feeling and sensing. Neither resisting or holding on, allowing it to be in the field of mindfulness. And then again, coming back to your breath for one more minute. The last minute, letting the breath be your guide to yourself, sensing and feeling the in-breaths and out-breaths. I feel like reading this quote from Thomas Merton. He writes, "There is in all things an inexhaustible sweetness and purity, a silence that is a fountain of action and of joy. It rises up in wordless gentleness and flows out to me from the unseen roots of all created being." There is in all things an inexhaustible sweetness and purity. I think many of us live preoccupied lives. And when our lives are preoccupied by things, by our concerns and our worries, it's very hard to be aware of the inexhaustible sweetness and purity that's always here. It's in today's comic strips, there's a comic strip called Rhymes with Orange. You see it today? And it had something like 6 or 7 stages to human life. And it was made up of what people are concerned about. And the first was like a little boy, and he was concerned, kind of he's screaming for ice cream. That's really what he wanted. And then the next one was what? A little bit older. Oh, exams. Worried about exams. And the next one was what, work and relationships and taxes, with one of them. They keep getting older. And then aging, and then retirement. And it was kind of graphic, you know, just like nothing changed except the person getting older in each frame. But and there's a different preoccupation, but the way in which the person is preoccupied is exactly the same. And we just substitute one preoccupation for another as we get older, for many of us. And there's very little room in a preoccupied mind and heart for really knowing ourselves and knowing our friends and knowing the world around us. And I've met many people in my capacity as a meditation teacher and talking to people about their lives who become strangers to themselves. And they don't really know themselves. They don't really know who they are, what's going on within them. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes it has external symptoms. And sometimes people will start by talking about how they feel alienated from the people around them. And we talk for a while what that's like and what's going on. And at some point it becomes clear that, of course, they're alienated from the world around them because they're alienated from themselves. How could they have any contact, real contact with people around them if they're not there for themselves even? There's no one here to be, you know, in touch with out there. And the source of their suffering is not so much the problems externally, but really is that the loss of contact with themselves. So mindfulness is to be in touch, is to wake up, to be a present. And one of the things that I find so beautiful about mindfulness practice is that nothing is denied. There's no feeling, oh, something is wrong, or something is denied, or some part of us is not acceptable. All we're asking to do in mindfulness is to wake up for what's actually here. And sometimes I like to point out that from a Buddhist point of view, mindfulness practice is a sacred practice. Or we could say perhaps that it brings us into touch with that which is sacred. And it isn't that like the sacred is anything different than what's already always happening for us and who we are, but what's sacred about mindfulness practice is when mindfulness practice doesn't exclude anything. When everything's included, everything can be included, then mindfulness practice becomes sacred. Sacredness is produced by no longer any outside. And most of us live our lives having an outside, having outside people, who are outside concerns, outside the family, outside my preoccupations, outside myself, outside this part of me, the it that's part of me, you know, that it, you know, is not me, it's something else. And there's always something which is, you know, the other. And mindfulness, it becomes a capacity we have to be all-inclusive, to include it all. And it's a little bit strange to talk this way, and I hope that as you do this practice, you get a sense of maybe what I mean by this. So Today the instructions are going to be about emotions. And the emotions are about a very important part of many of our lives, all of our lives, I would say. And they are important in many ways, partly because they're a big part of our lives. They're there a lot. But they're also there important because they motivate a lot of our actions and a lot of the choices, decisions we make about our lives are motivated by our emotions. They're also important because the way we see the world around us, the way we see ourselves, can be filtered or colored by our emotions. And so if we primarily have certain strong emotion present, it affects how we see things. And it's obvious in some situations, right? There are many times when you wished you hadn't acted or spoken when you were angry. And you would have been nice if you'd waited until you stopped being angry because you made a fool of yourself. The anger affects the motivation of how you act was affected by the anger. Or we're feeling irritated, and the irritation takes the form of seeing something wrong in everything around us. And so that emotion of irritation is filtering the way we perceive the world. It's selecting out part of the world, creating again the separation, excluding parts of it. Now there's a feeling, there's a kind of a sense some people get when they hear about Buddhism or hear Buddhist teaching, that Buddhism is about detachment, and becoming completely placidly calm and detached and not having any emotions and being completely kind of separate from the world and everything. And that's not true. I believe there's a tendency for Buddhist practitioners, mindfulness practitioners, to become more calm or more at ease in their world. But being at ease doesn't mean you become emotionally neutral. Actually, what I feel happens as we practice is our capacity to have emotions and feelings becomes actually stronger and cleaner than it is before. Many of us have very strong emotions, but it's not necessarily clean the way those emotions happen. And what I mean by that is we're complicated by many other reactions we have to those emotions. We have judgments about them. We have associations to them. That makes it complicated. So, for example, if I get angry, I have this judgment, it's wrong for me to be angry. It's not good for me to be angry. I'm bad because I'm angry. And because of that judgment, I've complicated it. It's gotten so complicated now I'm depressed because I've gotten angry. And that depression is a complicated reaction to anger. And what we're looking for in mindfulness is not to change or do away with emotions. We're actually kind of allowing yourself to have the whole kaleidoscope, all the colors of the rainbow as full as possible, but to have them occur cleanly. I prefer the word uncomplicatedly. Have uncomplicated emotions. If you're angry, just be angry. And don't have all the secondary and tertiary kind of reactivity to it that might arise. The judgments, the expectations, the justifications that arise. If you're happy, the same thing. Just be happy. Don't try to show it off to someone or try to do this or that with it. Just be happy. And I believe that so much of our suffering around emotions comes not from the emotions themselves, though some emotions are painful in and of themselves. But the suffering, a lot of the suffering, comes from the way in which we complicate the emotional presence, the emotion that's present. We're afraid of certain emotions. We're intimidated by them. We believe some of them, and so we act out of it. And many, many ways we get complicated. So Buddhist practice is not to deny who we are. It's really to allow ourselves. When are we more truly ourselves? When we're angry, or when we're judging our anger and being depressed? Maybe you say we're all the time we're ourselves. It doesn't matter, and that's a good answer. But maybe you could also say that maybe you're more truly yourself when you're simply angry, without having to, you know, complicate it. Don't you think? So in mindfulness practice then, so that's kind of like the ideal, then, have uncomplicated emotions. Mindfulness practice is not supposed to be idealistic. So it's supposed to be what you can actually do. And the actual moment-to-moment practice of mindfulness, we're simply waking up to our emotions as they are. Oh, this is what's happening now. Oh, I'm having a tertiary reaction to my anger. Isn't that interesting? You know, as opposed to saying, oh shit, I'm having a tertiary reaction to my anger. Because if you do that, guess what? That's a quadruciary reaction to it. Right? You just complicated one more level of reactivity to it. So, just to recognize what's happening in the actuality. Oh, this is what's happening. This is what's happening. So emotions are a very important part of our life, and we include them as part of the mindfulness. And that's what all the instructions, I'll give the instructions for today. But before I do that, at the beginning and the end of this little sitting we did, I asked you to kind of just feel what your emotion or mental state, mood was like, and to feel it and sense it, feel it in the body. What was that like to do for you? What happened? What did you notice when you brought your attention to that?
All my emotions that were quite obvious before I closed my eyes somehow became much more difficult to perceive.
Because?
Almost like I was looking for them, so they were all hiding.
That could be. The mind is tricky. Yes.
I also found it difficult to find my emotions as you described. When you said to try to find some place in your body where you feel it, I sort of felt something maybe, but I wasn't really sure. But then at the end of the sitting, what I thought I felt in response to feeling where my emotions were was sort of like this buzzing in my brain. You know, sort of like my brain was shutting down my emotions or something. So that's where I concentrated my attention.
Great. That's where you did the right thing. Did any of you have trouble finding an emotion or mood? You did? There's always one.
Very subtle.
That could be very subtle. But there's always something. And you know, but one of the things, you know, calmness is a mood. Sometimes people think that, you know, calmness is kind of invisible. There was one poor woman on a retreat once, apparently came to the teacher and said, "I'm having this really strange feeling or emotion, some experience. I don't know what it is. I've never had this before." And the teacher said, "Well, you'll go back and pay attention." And she came back the next interview and said, "I found out what it was. I'm calm." I never knew what that was before. But sometimes it is subtle. That's fine. So it's subtle. Yes?
I thought it was kind of strange because I thought I think I understood what my emotion was, and then when you said to find out where it was, I thought it was in my head, which felt strange for me because I didn't think the emotions were in your head, but maybe they are.
It could be. It could be where the energetics of it is for you primarily is in the head. And that's fine. It could be. It depends a little bit. Some emotions are, you know, you get angry, it might be you're flushed in your face, right? That's in your head. So it definitely could be, if you feel really stressed out, it could be in the head. Many emotions can be in the head. However, in addition, if we get thoughtfully preoccupied around the emotion, and it's very tight and very wound up, the thinking process, how we feel it primarily might be the energetics of the thinking that's associated with the emotion, not the emotion itself, in which case the energetics might be in the head also. But that's fine. So if you felt it in your head, what happened to it? As you allowed it to be there and you simply felt it. Yeah, did anything happen? Just stayed exactly the same, or you get stronger or weaker? Or?
It stayed the same for a while, and I got a little weaker, but it didn't change much.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you.
I think I actually confused myself and started thinking about why it was.
Great. Anyone else? Okay, so in talking about then emotions and the instructions, what I like to do is kind of liken the practice to a spider in a spider's web. That a spider, you know, supposedly sits in the center of the web and just waits for something to happen. When something else happens on the web, the spider scampers out and attends to it. And when it's attended to, whatever that means for spider, then it goes back into the center of the web. In the same way, we sit in the web, in the mandala of our life. And we sit down, we place the breath in the center of that mandala, that web. When something else happens in that web, then we go up there, we go to it, and we settle our attention there and attend to it, whatever that means for a human being. We attend to it, be with it, sense it, explore it, get to know it, allow it to be there. What's different between the spider's web and our mandala is that there's always a physical center of the web that the spider is left behind. When we do our practice, the center goes with us. And so it's not like we feel like, oh, I need to go back to the breath, that's where the center is. As long as something is predominant on your mandala and you bring your attention there, you're then at the center of your particular web. So you can be content there, you just be there. So the basic instructions of mindfulness is we pay attention to our breath, at least when we're doing a sitting practice, we pay attention to the breath until something else arises in our experience, in the field of our experience, and it's more predominant, it's stronger than our ability to be interested with the breath. So we talked last week about physical experiences. If a strong physical experience comes into the foreground of attention, we let go of the breath, and we gently, softly make that the focus of attention. Just stay with it, we name it, label it. And you can name it kind of in a regular, very soft way. It's not like you name it once and that's it. But you're in a kind of soft, kind of regular pattern, and a whisper in the back of the mind. Just label it. Encourage your mind to rest and stay present rather than floating away. And you feel it. You experience what it is going on in the body directly. The same thing with emotions. Emotions are in the background. And you know they're there and they're subtle, but it's really easy to stay with the breath or stay in your body. Don't worry about it. However, sometimes what will happen is emotions will come into the foreground and become quite predominant. And rather than struggling against them or trying to avoid them or whatever, just let go of the breath and just make them the center of attention. Make them where you rest your attention. So labeling and sensing the emotion, feeling it, naming it, and then feeling it where it is in the body. All emotions are manifested in the body. If there was no physical manifestation for the emotion, you wouldn't know you had the emotion. And it isn't that, you know, the emotion is one thing and the expression of it in the body is another. The two are one and the same. Our physical manifestation of emotion and the emotion are the same thing. You can separate out different elements to an emotion. You can say there's a cognitive part, the thoughts and the stories, and there's a physical part, you know, the face gets flushed or the stomach gets tight or whatever. And there's feelings that are associated with that emotion. But in Buddhism, all these things are considered to be one whole. But we tend to so often give priority to the cognitive aspect of the emotion, to the stories and ideas around the emotion. And the cognitive aspect, the stories have their place to pay attention to it, and we'll talk about that next week. But primarily when we do mindfulness, we're not interested in the story. It can be a relief. I don't have to think about the story. What you want to do is you want to feel the emotion directly without being mediated through the story. And the way to do that is to feel the physical part of it, the part that many of us leave out. And it's a way of being present for an emotion without getting entangled with it. Because if you get present for the story, you're likely to get entangled with it. Who did what to who, and what you're going to do to who, or whatever. But if you feel it in your body, it's a lot easier to be present for it without being entangled. And we want to be present. Now, you know, there was a fad for a while for there to be catharsis, you know, in psychology for a catharsis. And everywhere you went, you're supposed to cathart as best you can. And then they realized that that was kind of overdone. But before catharsis, there was repression, right? And that was the reason why they came up with catharsis, was they realized repression was bad. So they realized they had to do something about that, so they thought, well, the opposite, right? Mindfulness practice, emotions in mindfulness practice, what we're trying to do is neither to express the emotion, which means acting with it, acting on it, getting behind it and fueling it and getting into it. We're neither doing that, nor are we repressing it, denying it, pushing it away. We're simply allowing it to surface, allowing it to be there, and simply being mindful of it, without adding anything to it, without justifying it, getting entangled with it, acting on it, giving it juice, giving it energy, but not also denying it or pulling it away. Simply allowing, and it's beautiful to do that in meditation. If you're sitting in meditation, in your meditation posture, sitting maybe with your eyes closed and sitting quietly, And give all the space and room in the world for your emotion to be there, if it's strong. If it's stronger than your ability to be with the breath, just get out of the way. Just let it come, bubble up and surface and do whatever. Let the joy and ecstasy bubble up and surface. Let it be there. Let the sorrow bubble up and be there fully. Let the fear come up and be there. Let's just give space for it. After all, Buddhism is about freedom, right? So give freedom to your emotions. Let freedom, let these things be as they are. So this is kind of the middle way between repression and expression. Repression and expression, in Buddhist point of view, is kind of more like catharsis, more like acting it out, acting on it, getting involved in it. We don't want to get involved, but we don't want to pull away from it either. Just allow it to be, allow ourselves to be in the midst of it. So in relationship to emotions, then, there are four aspects we can talk about for what mindfulness is. The first is, it's important to recognize an emotion when it's important, when it's there, when it's a significant part of our life. And that's a lot easier said than done for a lot of people. That a lot of people, strong emotions, sometimes you don't have a clue what's going on. And you might think, well, then it's not strong. Well, sometimes it can be very strong and actually a source of tremendous motivation and action and acting out and all that. But because of the way in which we select our identity, we don't see certain parts of ourselves which threaten that identity. So, for example, maybe it's because of my Norwegian background, but and hopefully this was the case rather than still is, but I was the kind of person who wasn't supposed to get angry. Now, if you're that kind of person who doesn't have space in their psyche to see themselves as being angry, guess what? You know. Well, I'm not angry. I feel fine. And I got into trouble. A lot of this complicated extra suffering, because I didn't recognize that I was furious in certain situations. I just didn't have a clue because I hadn't learned to pay attention to notice that. So the first thing is just learning to recognize an emotion when it's there. And if you've learned to kind of tune into your body and check in with your body, the body is often the first indicator of a very good indicator. Oh, there's something going on here, that some emotion, something I need to learn about. Pay attention to. So the first thing is recognition. The second is acceptance, is to accept it, which in this introductory course I've been calling this allowance. Allowing it to be there. It doesn't mean condoning it, doesn't mean justifying it, doesn't mean pushing it away. It just means allow it to be there so you can get to know it without judgment. So acceptance, so recognition, allowance. And that's, allowance is often very hard for some people because certain emotions are considered to be unacceptable. And it isn't always just the difficult emotions. Sometimes beautiful emotions are unacceptable. People with certain religious backgrounds have been taught that feeling joy or pleasure is inappropriate or something's wrong about it. And so they come to meditation, and sometimes in meditation there's a lot of physical and emotional pleasure or joy that can be part of it. And so they pull back and say, no way, I'm going to feel this. And they shut that off. Sometimes it's, the more difficult emotions, anger or fear, for whatever reason we pull back and say, I'm not going to experience that. We don't recognize it. So recognition isn't always so easy. The acceptance isn't so both recognition and acceptance is not so easy. So first is recognition, then acceptance. The third thing to do is to name it, to label it. And with emotions it gets particularly interesting and useful to label the experience. Because the natural ecology of emotions, I suppose, emotions get their power, a lot of their strength, identified with it, and say, I'm an angry person, and I need justification, I need revenge, I need this and that, or whatever. We identify with it and say, oh, I'm angry and this is really bad. I can't stand it. I shouldn't be an angry person. I better hide. I better do this. And there's all this reaction around being angry. There's often identification. We associate it with some meaning it has for us ourselves. A judgment, association. And that actually is where a lot of the power of the emotion comes from, is that identification. A lot of what fuels it so it keeps going. If we name something, the naming of it is a different force, in a sense, than the force of identification. And it actually counteracts the force of identification, and there's kind of a softening of that identification, that power. And so it's kind of like, this is why the old fairy tales, where if you name the dragon loses its power. And so in emotional life, or inner life, that's often the case. If you can name what's going on, and very simple, you don't have to be kind of exact, you know, just close enough. It often can kind of soften identification around it. And it's a lot easier to be present because you're not so tight up around it. So we name it, we label it. Anger, happiness. So there's recognition, acceptance, naming. And the fourth thing is investigation, which we kind of touched on earlier. And when you've done the other, when you've allowed it to be there and you kind of named it and recognized it, then you want to investigate it more carefully. And one way to do that, the primary way to do that, to begin doing this, is to feel it in the body. Where is it in the body that you feel this emotion? It's a lot easier to be present for an emotion if you let the body be the container for the emotion. If your little puny storyline is the container for it, it's very hard. It kind of keeps spilling over and doing all, you know, raising havoc. But if you let the body be the container and let it rise and pass in the body, it can be a lot easier not to identify and getting caught up in it. It's not like it doesn't become the whole world. It's just part of the world. It's part of the body that arises and passes. So where do you feel it in the body? And there's always some place we feel it. Your stomach, the chest, the face, the hands, the legs. It depends on the emotion where it might be. It might be warm, wonderful tingling, smooth sensations. It might be tightness and tension. It might be burning sensations. It's a whole range of things it might be. When you can notice it in the body, where it is, and notice what sensations make it up, then you want to bring your attention carefully to those physical sensations, just the way we talked last week about doing it for any physical sensation. So say that you're feeling a lot of fear, and you feel the fear is kind of a lot of tightness and vibration in the chest. So you feel it in the chest, and you explore it. What does it feel like in the chest? Oh, it feels like tightness. What does the tightness feel like? Oh, it feels, you know, it feels like this plate of pressure, a plate of tension all over the surface of my chest, or it feels like a hard ball in the center of my chest. And you explore it, you explore the edges, you sense it, you let the mind rest there, just be there with it. Not to get rid of it, not to change it, but simply to learn have the ability to allow yourself to be present carefully for what's actually happening in the present moment. That's what we're trying to cultivate always in mindfulness, the ability to be present in a non-reactive way with what's happening. So we notice it, so we explore, we investigate the emotion. And as a byproduct of that, we become less complicated with it, identifications with it kind of soften, and sometimes then the emotion starts to change. And as a byproduct, we often become a lot more ease in the midst of it. But maybe not. Sometimes you get present for an emotion, you recognize it's there, and things actually get worse for a while. It's kind of like you're pulling the lid off of Pandora's box, you know, and oh my God. But in Buddhism, we say it's better to be aware of something than it is to be numb to it. And many of us, you know, if it's shut down, we're kind of numb to it or shut down, you know, it's not particularly useful. So become aware. So those are kind of the four aspects of mindfulness of emotions. Recognition, acceptance, naming, and investigation. And I stress again the importance of feeling in your body. The more you can feel your emotions as a physical event in your body, I believe the more at ease you'll feel with emotions that you have, especially when they're really, really strong. I mean, I think almost everyone as a human has, if you have strong emotions, find it somewhat difficult to be present and be wisely present and make wise choices in the midst of that strong emotional outburst. But if you can take the time to feel it in your body and allow the body to hold it, you probably be more responsible how you act in the midst of it. The last thing I'll say, and then I'll see if you have any questions, is the etymology of the word emotions. The word, the E part of emotions means outward, going out, moving out. The motion part means motion, moving, so moving out. And what I like about this in the etymology of the word emotion is that emotion, in the etymology, it's a movement, it's an action. Whereas when we take emotion as a noun, my anger, my happiness, my whatever, we often, by identifications, we lock onto it. And it feels very solid, like it's going to be forever. And this is it, you know, this is the way it is. Actually, emotions are something in process. Unless we identify really strongly with it, we complicate it. The only reason why emotion stays the same through time is because we've gotten latched on and gotten involved in some way. It happens that way because we're fueling it in some way, with our thoughts, our ideas, and identifications. If we can see it really clearly and be present for it in a non-reactive way without identifying with it, it gives the emotion its chance to process itself, because process is movement. And all emotions want to be processed. So that's part of the reason why in Buddhism we really respect emotions. We don't say any emotions are wrong or any emotions are bad or any emotions are inappropriate. Emotions are always something in process, and we want to allow the natural process a chance to unfold. But if we identify with it or judge it, we interrupt that process. That makes sense? So now it's your turn. Any questions about emotions or working with emotions, being present for them? Yes?
When we were doing that first meditation, I had this sense of when I would start to pay attention to the emotion, I started to want to create a bunch of, you know, go to a bunch of thoughts, and I had the sense that if I go along this like a merry-go-round of thoughts, they will really get that emotion cranked up. and you know, so I would say, well, I'll just keep paying attention to sort of feeling. It was very quiet, but there was always this big pull to want to go ahead and get the flywheel going, you know. Uh-huh. And I'm sort of listening to what you're saying and thinking, well, what is the path sort of exploration or mindfulness of this, whatever this phenomenon is, you know? And it, you know what I'm saying, it's sort of sitting quietly, wanting to be unleashed in a series of thoughts. It seems.
Maybe. So you reported what your experience is in a really wonderful way. You were mindful, and that's great. If you can, I mean, there's nothing wrong with just being mindful in a quiet way of an emotion. And what you maybe have learned is that for you, in certain circumstances, the strength of the power of the emotion comes from the stories and the ideas and the thinking that kind of can wind up around it. And so that's a very wise thing to notice. Not that we say it's wrong, but to notice that. And if you notice that, and if you notice, well, the genesis of the power of the emotion is my preoccupation, my association, my thinking about it, rather than in the emotion in and of itself, maybe I want to be very careful how I investigate the emotion and get to know it. Because maybe if I let it get strong by my thoughts, what I'm learning is really about my thoughts more than the emotion itself. So maybe you allow yourself to be with that quiet state, and the investigation becomes more of a quiet mind, kind of sensing what is here, and getting to know it in a very quiet, let the mindfulness be as subtle as the subtlety of the quietness. Now, the other thing you reported was you felt this, if I remember right, a strong pull, a motivation to go into the thinking. Right? That pull, that impulse, then becomes, if that's very strong, that becomes the subject of meditation, of mindfulness. It doesn't mean you act on it. It doesn't mean you kind of follow it. But that just be there with it. What's that like to feel this pull? Get to know it really well. And if you get to know it really well, you might learn something unusual about it, about what its genesis, where its genesis is. Yeah?
I had this experience this evening that I often have where I was feeling an emotion that I would call frustration, I guess. But the physical manifestation of it was a kind of numbness, I think. And I often find it really hard to stay with that. I mean, I don't quite know how to pay attention to numbness, you know, I kind of try to find where the edges of it are and things, but I guess it's like the out-breath or something, I sort of lose it trying to pay attention to numbness.
Yeah.
If you have any tips.
the first thing that occurs to me is make slightly more effort and just hang out in the middle of it, and it's not so easy. And no one said that mindfulness is supposed to be easy. No one says it's supposed to be easy to stay with an experience. I mean, there's no, like, you know, the practice is just do your best you can, not do it right. Isn't that nice? So there's that part. The other thing, though, for you, what you might try doing is actually a little bit different than what we've said so far. So all the rest of you, you know, don't listen. be present for a while with that feeling of numbness, and then ask yourself and sense within yourself, what is it that wants to be expressed right now? Deep inside of you, what is it that most wants to be expressed? And by asking that question and kind of not thinking of the answer, but kind of allowing the answer, kind of sensing what's there, you might find that that numbness is covering something that wants to come out and reveal itself. And by asking what that might be, kind of directly, and giving it a chance, that might come up quicker than if you just hang out with the numbness for a long time until, you know, you kind of see through the numbness to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you might try that and see what happens. And maybe nothing will happen, but that's sometimes a very interesting question. Is what wants to be expressed now? I shouldn't say to give too much. It's not good to give too much instruction, but one other thing you can try. It's kind of fun. It's kind of very closely related to this question. Is you can look around your body, and then when you find this numbness, look around your body and see, find out where in your body is the most energy. And, you know, it might be a completely different place than the numbness, but where is the most energetic place in your body at that particular time? And then hang out with that energy. Forget about the numbness for a while, and then see what happens. Yes?
Can I tell you about what happens towards the end of my meditation?
Sure, if it's brief.
No, I don't think
I... We can maybe do it one-on-one some other, you know, after yeah. Afterwards.
Okay.
It's, you have a question? Last question then.
Well, I've got a question.
Or comment, please.
For me, it was quite a discovery that a lot of times my emotion, an emotion of mine, it is only half related to me. The other is related to someone else or other people. So many emotions are really communication. I mean, getting red in the face is often something we don't feel like we want to let other people see, but
right.
But we're at the same time we're putting it out there.
Right.
It's helped me a lot often to look at what am I trying to tell someone else when I'm feeling something. It could be, you know, a cry for help or a warning that I might explode. Or,
Many emotions are kind of a motivation behind it. So part of what we pay attention to, just later in the introductory course, but part of what we pay attention to is the intention behind our experiences. So what's the motivation behind that, you know, something? And so that's what you're saying. What's interesting about emotions, and you talked about the connection with other people, is that some emotions connect us with, in a healthy way with other people. And some emotions separate us from other people. But actually, I think it's a little bit more subtle than that. So if anger, for example, can, you know, separate you from people. But it's more subtle than that. Every emotion that arises has the opportunity, there's the opportunity of that emotion to either use it to connect us to other people or separate us from other people. And it's not so, it's a matter of knowing how to work with it. So for example, if you're angry, we all know, I think, how it can separate from other people. But how do we use that emotion to connect, make a healthy, useful connection with other people? Well, one way is to not go say, you no good bum, but to go say, you might just say, I'm angry in this situation. I'd like to understand it better. I want you to understand something about me, that this is how I experience life and how I react to what's going on. And maybe, you know, we can talk about it. Or this is a painful area for me. And I'm trying to work with this and try to understand my pain in relationship to this kind of anger. And that gives that other person a chance to make a connection with you around it, or kind of understand you. Maybe they won't, but there's a possibility at least. So I don't know if you understand what I'm saying, but each emotion, there's an opportunity there, depending how we relate to it, how we use it, to connect to others or to separate ourselves. So let's end with this short sitting. So nothing needs to happen except that you're aware of what's happening. Aware of your breathing, your body, and your emotions. Letting the mind be still and open. A still and open mind, open to the body, to the breath, open to the emotions. Open to what the next moment might bring. To what's happening right now. This particular in-breath, this very out-breath. I'll end this sitting with a poem by Rumi. And the poem is called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. So momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and respect them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He or she may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide. This being human is a guest house. Please be good hosts as you sit this week to yourself. And as the instructions get carried on through the weeks, it could seem that sound like they're getting more complicated. There's more things to pay attention to. The idea is to stay very simple with the meditation. It's really stay with the breath the best you can, a simple way, until something else arises that seems stronger than your ability to be with the breath. And in a very simple way, attend to that. Be with that. And if that's a physical, just be with it in the body. If it's sounds, be with the sounds. If it's emotions, be with emotions. That's all you need to do. And then when it goes away, when it's either fully acknowledged, or becomes weaker, no longer compelling, or it's gone away, then you go back to the breath and be with the breath. So, thank you all. And then next week we'll do thoughts.